Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Carrie. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Mr. Maxwell is with us today, and we're very excited for that. I'm going to tell everyone who does not know, and they'd have to be under a rock if they don't, who Mr. Maxwell is. Jordy Maxwell is a preeminent researcher and independent scholar in the field of religious philosophy. His interest in the subject has began back in 1959. He has conducted dozens of intensive seminars, hosted his own radio shows, guest on more than 600 radio shows, written, produced, and appeared in numerous television shows and documentaries. His work on the subject of secret societies, both ancient and modern, and their symbols has fascinated audiences around the world for decades. Considering the rapidly moving events of today and the real part that hidden religious agendas play in our modern war-torn world, he feels his controversial subjects are not only interesting to explore, but too important to ignore. AJ, what do you think of that? I mean, he's got like a wealth of knowledge on so many subjects. Some of them include astrotheology, sexual symbolism, foundation for modern day religion, secret societies and toxic religions, world mysteries, both ancient and modern, ancient symbols, ancient sciences and technology, hidden Bible teachings and mysteries, the sun in the history of politics and religion, and secret societies and their influence on world events. What do you think?
Well, I think it's the perfect person for the couple of topics, the last four topics we have. He should be able to fill everybody in that was on a panelist or listening in. So that's just perfect for this second month of the year.
Absolutely.
First, the second month of the year to bring it full circle, so we can actually be ready for prepare for anything after him, because he just has a wealth of knowledge that we need to tap into.
Okay, well then let's do it, ladies and gentlemen. Very excited to welcome to center stage for the first time, Mr. Jordy Maxwell. Good afternoon, Mr. Maxwell. How are you?
Well, thank you, dear, for having me on. I'm just still here, so I guess I'm doing better.
Well, we're glad to have you.
A lot of people, yeah.
We're very glad to have you.
Thank you. Well, you know, the subjects that that are today very important to people, like the economy and government and the corruption and where are we going as a human race and where, you know, what's going on with the earth, it has a long history going back into the ancient world. And if you're not interested in history, which I wasn't when I was in school, I hated history. Of course, I hated school.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never interested in anything going on in school. But when I get out of class, all the way through school, when I would get out of school, I would go immediately to the library and start reading and researching and writing notes, etc. So I was always interested in wisdom and knowledge and what was going on, but I knew I wasn't getting anything in school, period. So I have to do my own research. And so as a kid, I was doing that kind of questioning and reading and researching, because I realized that the adults around me, even 9, 10, 12 years old, I realized that the adults around me had no idea in the world what was going on. I would ask them questions, and they would just look at me like I was a fool because they didn't know what I was talking about.
Wow.
So I realized if I'm going to get to the bottom of anything, I've got to do it myself. That's it, because if you're going to leave it to somebody else, first of all, they're mentally lazy. Second, they're not very well informed, mostly ignorant, ill-informed, and prejudiced and bigoted. They got their own little particular belief systems. I'm not interested in all of that. I'm interested in the facts of life. I want to know for sure how things work.
Elephant in the room, and I would be remiss not to ask you this. What's going on in the Middle East? I mean, with Egypt and Yemen and Jordan, is that like a clear indicator that the New World Order is in full effect?
Well, of course, but it's been in full effect for many, many years. It's just that no one called to tell you, you know. But
well, tell us signs that the New World Order was in effect years ago and we just didn't get it. What were those signs?
Well, right off the bat, in 1913, the Federal Reserve was brought in as far back as 1868 after the Civil War. Somebody should have already figured out that that the Great American Republic, what we call the United States of America, the Great American Republic, was involved in some problems. We were having a little problem. It's called the Civil War, in which one half of the country was killing the other half. And after that Civil War, the country was never the same again. The United States Constitution for the United States of America was dropped officially. It was officially disbanded and dropped after the Civil War. So right off the bat, if you were watching American history, you would figure, wow, now we don't have a constitution for the United States of America. We don't have a constitution anymore because the Civil War destroyed the republic. And they tried to put it all back together after a war. But, you know, when you get one half of the people in the country going to war, and I mean bloody war, against the other half, well, whatever it was you started out with, you don't have it anymore. What you've got is a new set of problems here, a new set of circumstances, and that original idea of the Republic of the United States of America with the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, well, that's gone. That's over. That's finished. Capiche? It don't exist anymore. So in 1868...
They must destroy the Great Republic in order to bring in the New World Order?
Say it again?
That they have to destroy the Great Republic power to bring in the New World Order.
Well, of course. I mean, how are you going to have a whole new arrangement in the neighborhood if the biggest guy on the block, down at the end of the block, who's the meanest guy in town, he's not going along with any of it. And he's giving you a warning. Don't mess with him or his home. So you can have all your silly plans that you want, but you better not deal with him. Well, the first thing you got to do is if you're going to convert the whole neighborhood and the whole town, you better take care of him first, because he's going to be the biggest problem, because he's big and he's mean and he's armed and he's already told you he's not interested. Well, then you better do something about him before you go making all your plans. And so that's what happened. America's got to be dealt with first before you can have a world government. And the most powerful people in the world, I'm not saying the most intelligent or the most wisest, but the most powerful people in the world were the Americans. I mean, we wait till the last couple of years of the World War to get into the World War, and we went in and beat everybody. And
wow.
So the Germans had had many years to build up their military. They had, you know, all kinds of high technology that they were working on for many years, getting ready for a world war. America was out watching, you know, on skateboards. They didn't know anything was happening. But as soon as the war began, they still weren't in it. They weren't having nothing to do with it. And when finally the United States decided, America finally decided to get into the Second World War, it was over. Because they go in and they're gonna whip everybody, period. And so America has always been understood from this very beginning to be a very powerful place on the world map. Everything circulates around the U.S. of A. Everything. Banks,
can you break down
military,
the UN? I know you don't want to go here because Mr. Jordan has told me things that bore him now. And talking about the New World Order, he feels like he's told us that so many times we ought to know that by now. But for those that may not, can you give them just a clear, or not clear, but just a little definition of what New World Order means? I mean, how will they know when they see it? How will they recognize it for what it is?
Well, if you are older, if you were, say, 50 years of age or older, you know you've seen the country you live in change. You no longer have freedoms. You no longer have any sense of freedom or protection or anything. Everybody knows, you know, nothing is concrete anymore. Banking, your money is not concrete anymore. Banking, corruption is everywhere. So if you're an older person, you already know there's something wrong, something very wrong, and it's not getting any better by the day. And what is happening is that the foundations for Western civilization is changing. the old order of Western civilization is being dissolved purposely in preparation for a new form of society, a new form of world governments coming about. And so it's called globalism. I don't care what you call it. But it's no longer going to be the French people for France, the German people for Germany, American people for America, and everybody is individually different, and each country respects each other's culture. No, that's gone. That's gone for good. We are now a corporation, a world corporation, a world government, and nobody is special anymore. Nobody. And so everybody will get on their knees. Everybody's going to feel the iron boot of totalitarian fascism. Everybody in the world is going to have to bow to the banking and to the money and to the political system that's being put in place right now for the whole entire world. France, Germany, Spain, Africa, Asia, everybody's under the gun to get in line and understand there's going to be a new arrangement on the earth, new things are going to happen. And all this idea of sovereignty and the Chinese own the China and they're all for China. No. From here on out, China is working for America. American industry is what's keeping China alive. But then again, it's the money that China's making turning right around and putting it back into America as investments in our bonds. So today, the whole world is a business. And to better understand all of this, go and rent a movie if you can find it. It's called Network. It was done about 30 years ago, a major motion picture called Network. Go and get the movie and rent it and watch it, because Hollywood was telling you exactly what was coming, exactly how it's going to work. And since then, all kinds of movies have been telling you over and over how this world is going to work in the future. And but, you know, that's what Hollywood does. Hollywood does three things, and they do it very well. Hollywood does three things. They tell you what the world governments have already done, what they're doing now, and what they're getting ready to do. So if you understand how to read the symbols, if you understand how to go to a movie and sit and watch the movie and understand the story they're telling you. It's a propaganda. It's a story. And that's why on television you have, in radio, you have something called radio and TV programs. That's what you do with a computer. You program it. And so whatever you put into a computer program, that's what you're going to get back. So whatever it is you typed into the computer, that's what the computer is going to give you back. It's a program. And so in our media in America, we are being told every night, every day, if you listen to the news, they're telling you what to think, how to think, and the way to think. And it's a program. They tell you to be very careful and do what the police tell you to do and do with this and that. And so they are programming you.
I think you call that, Hollywood calls it, you call it behavioral modification, that Hollywood calls behavioral modifications?
Yeah, that's all it is. If you understand, now think about this, if you understand that the whole system, well, let me go back and say this, that in Europe, 1,000 years before the Roman Empire even existed, there existed in Europe, both northeast, west, and southern Europe, there existed already before Rome a very powerful establishment, I guess you would say. An establishment of power. It was called the Druids. And the Druids were the priesthood. They were the judges. They were the teachers. They were the law enforcement. They were everything. It was a priesthood. They were called the Druids. Well, the Druids were Celtic or Celtic in their origins, or what we refer to loosely as the white man's origins of Europe. White European people were Druidic, Druids. Well, one of the most important symbols that the Druid priesthoods used as a symbol of their power was a magic wand, like Merlin the Magician with his magic wand, and orchestra leaders and orchestra conductors today They're waving a magic wand, and everybody better dance to the tune of the master who is holding the wand. Everybody plays according to that magic wand that's being waved. And so the magic wands were always the symbol of the Druid establishment, or the white man's establishment.
Mm-hmm.
But the important point is that the magic wands were always made out of the wood of a holly tree. It was made out of Hollywood. And today, that's exactly what's happening today. The Druidic white establishment is still waving their magic wand in Hollywood. Hollywood. And they are manipulating and exploiting the psyche and the brains and the minds of the people through motion pictures, music, entertainment, and drugs. And so they have finally captured the whole world. And the people of the world do not realize that the entire world system is being manipulated and exploited. And the people are given bread and circuses, just like in the Roman Empire. Today, you know, all you're given is game shows on TVs, computer games for children, baseball, football, tennis, ping pong, soccer, football, baseball. I mean, it's always a ball game. It's some kind of a game. It's Hollywood, it's movie stars, it's all this glamour. It's all from the wood of a holly tree. And this is why today the whole world is ignorant, ill-informed, unread, and doomed. Because we don't know anything, we don't question anything, we don't understand anything. And unfortunately, most people don't care because the kind of knowledge that I've been dealing with all my life, unfortunately, is not something of any real importance to people because it doesn't have anything to do with football or basketball or kickerball or soccer or anything of any real importance.
Not exactly, because since you're speaking of Hollywood, looks like Hollywood has copied you a couple of times. I watched the movie
Da Vinci. Hollywood they've used my work.
The Da Vinci Code?
When you tell them how
the Da Vinci Code kind of copied something you've done before?
Well, if you go back and watch Da Vinci Code and then go back and watch my original video I did back in 89 or 90 called Basic Slide Presentation, you'll see the connections.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I even did back in 91, I did a video called The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Then they come out later on with a movie called Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
I've had motion picture producers, directors, movie stars, studio heads, people call and talk to me. I lived in Hollywood. I've lived here for 50 years. People know me here in Hollywood. And I've had people call and say, yeah, well, we use this part of you on the movie, and we use that, and this and that. We've used that. You know, so I know that they are using my stuff all the time. And I've heard from many people on the inside.
When Tom Hanks goes before that projector, tell them that scene.
That was amazing to me. He goes up on a, well, first of all, he's introduced as a speaker, and they introduce him and saying that he's one of the world's foremost experts on secret societies and occult symbols. Well, anybody who knows me knows I've been talking about just those two things for the past 50 years on Hollywood.
Mm.
And then when he goes up on the platform, he's showing the dollar bill with the pyramid, the dollar bill, talking about it. Well, I'm famous for doing that 35 years ago. And so I've been talking about the world of the occult. And, of course, people misunderstand the word occult. They think it means something dark and evil and bad. The word is a Latin word. Occult is a Latin word which means hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put your hand in your pocket, your hand is by definition a cult hand because it's hidden. And so there's nothing bad or evil about a cult. It means hidden. But the church knows, the Christian church and the Jewish church and the world, the Christian and Jewish establishment knows where they have actually come from. They know where they have got their teachings from, where they have come from in history. They know that. And so they don't want that kind of hidden knowledge, that wisdom of hidden knowledge about the history of the church, the history of Judaism, the history of the Bible, and the history of the human race. They don't want that being talked about. It's not good for business. People educating themselves and reading books and starting to get too smart for their own selves, they don't want that. So they say that anything to do with the mystical, the hidden symbolism of the church or the hidden messages in the church is occult. And then they say it's of the devil. The word devil, D-E-V-I-L, is putting the letter D in front of the word evil. You put a D in front of evil, it becomes devil. And the very word God comes from a root word for the word good. So you take an O out of good, becomes God. God is obviously good. And devil is evil. We're just talking words. We're using terms and words. And therefore, occult simply means hidden. Well, let me tell you something. All of the most important knowledge about banking, about government, about religion, about who you are, how we got here as humans, what's really going on the earth behind the world scenes that's going to affect you soon, who's doing what, all of that's been hidden. It's occult knowledge. And, of course, we don't want to involve ourselves with occult knowledge. We don't need to. We got football. We got television. We got alcohol. We got alcohol and drugs. We don't need all that learning and all that old educational stuff that Jordan Maxwell talks about. Well, one day soon, when it finally comes around, and what goes around comes around, and what is finally starting to happen to America, you're finally starting to awaken to the fact that you not only do not have a government, your money is worthless, your governments are worthless, institutions are corrupt, and now people are beginning to finally think what is going to happen to America, what's going to happen to us and our banks and our money. What's going on? Well, I was talking about what was going on 50 years ago.
And
now,
that's my next
finally,
question.
People are waking up.
Pause that thought. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHC's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, Talking with Jordan Maxwell. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, you need to press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390 and, again, press 1. A reminder, Mr. Maxwell is only going to be with us for 1 hour today, and we're down to our last 30-some-odd minutes in the broadcast. Also a reminder, Mr. A.J. Houston is manning the chat room today. So if you're interested in posting your comments or questions in the chat room, please feel free to do so, and A.J. Houston will present them to Mr. Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell, you know, I talked to you today, earlier, and we talked about, I asked you the question, who bankrupted America? And you quickly corrected me. And I'll ask that question again, and I'll let you tell them what you told me. My question to you was, who bankrupted America? And your answer was?
America is not bankrupt. America is the most wealthiest place on the planet Earth. But there is a world of difference between talking about America and talking about United States.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very big difference, and any good corporate attorney will explain it to you, that there's two different things going on here right now. There is a United States of America, and then there's the United States. And you need to go back to 1868 after the Civil War to understand what I'm talking about. After the Civil War, the original United States of America, as it was founded by the so-called founding fathers,
mm-hmm.
in the 1770s, that was done away with. That whole idea of the United States of America with the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all of that idea and the founding of this so-called United States of America was done away with after the Civil War. And in the place of the United States of America with its Constitution and Bill of Rights, there was a new corporation, a company that was founded. It's a corporation called United States Corporation. It was incorporated. A handful of people got together and started a company, a corporation. It was incorporated in Delaware. And it's a privately owned company. And the company was called United States Corporation. And today, if you are a member of that corporation or working for that corporation, by law, you are referred to as a citizen of the United States Corporation. And so today, you can either be an American or you are a U.S. citizen. But a U.S. citizen, by law, according to the law books, is a member of a corporation, which is privately owned corporation, which has been taken public, and now it is a public corporation. And so anyone who knows anything about business knows that in corporate law, you have to have a president of any corporation. Anybody can start a corporation, but you have to have a president of the corporation. And then also, according to the law, you if you're going to have a corporation, you have to have a vice president. It's called corporate law. You've got to have that. And also, you are required by law to have a secretary treasurer, somebody who can respond to the money that you're taking in, that's in charge of the money. So today, we have a president of the corporation called United States, it's Obama, and we have a vice president, and we have a secretary treasurer. It's a privately owned company.
Wow.
It has nothing to do with America as a republic. It's a privately owned company like Sears, like Baskin-Robbins, like MGM, like Ford Motor Company, privately owned company that has a president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, like any other corporation.
And you said we're all corporations, correct?
That's right. And so the way it worked is in the 14th Amendment, after the Civil War, something called the 14th Amendment was shoved through Congress. It was never actually ratified. And what basically happened is that the slaves who were already here in America, who had been brought here all the time, after the United States of America Constitution was done away with and the war was over, well, you had millions of black slaves, and so the question was, well, now what are you going to do with the black slaves that you got here? Got to do something because of a lot of them, so what are you going to do with them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't say that because they were originally, the black slaves were brought here under an act of war. It was an act of war to go to someone's country, kidnap them, and bring them back here. So all slaves were here in this country under an act of war. Well, the law, international law, says you cannot make someone who you brought to your country under an act of war, you cannot make them a full citizen. That's the law, because they were a slave. You can't make them an actual citizen. And so they said, well, then what are you going to do with the black population? You got to do something with them. And so they said, well, then we'll pass a new law. We'll pass a new law that says a new amendment. And it's called the 14th Amendment, which will give the idea that they can be treated like a citizen. They can be treated as if they were a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they can hold property and have an equitable interest in property, and they can get a job, et cetera. And so they will. And so what happened is that the black person in this country and the black population in this country got a form of citizenship. Now, if you go to a law dictionary, go to any good library, get a law dictionary, and look up the word color, you will find that any time, if I dress up like a policeman and I pull you over and I'm giving you a ticket or I'm harassing you, and in fact, I am not a cop, I've just dressed up like one, I can go to jail for that because that's impersonating an officer of the law. And the words that the attorneys will use in the court, they will say, I was guilty of impersonating an officer of the law under color of law. Under color of law. Meaning, it's not, I am not representing the law, but I'm just acting like I'm representing the law. So therefore, the crime is acting under color of law. And so therefore, there was no citizenship available to black people ever, period. And so you had to do something to at least let them live. So they were given a 14th Amendment citizenship, which means under color of law. They're not. It's not really a law because they can't ever be a real citizen, but they can be under color of law. That's why blacks were called colored people. Not because of being black. No, because they are citizens under the color of law and the 14th Amendment. Therefore, they're colored people. Understand the way this world actually works. And I've said this to you before, and I'm going to say it again. Nothing in this world
ever
that you understand works the way you think it does. Nothing.
Yeah. You said that. And I get that part because let's go into now the birth certificate. We think that we get a birth certificate because we're born, and so therefore that gives us or lets the world know who we are, but it's much grander than that.
I would think so. Look on the bottom of a birth certificate.
Okay.
Look on the bottom. First of all, where your mother and father signed the birth certificate,
yes, sir.
It doesn't say parent. It doesn't say mother and father or parent. It says informer.
Yeah.
And therefore, somebody is informing who? Somebody's informing somebody about something. Well, your parents are informing on you. It's an informer. They don't say parent. And look at the bottom of all birth certificates, and you will see where the birth certificate goes. And you will see the paper on which a birth certificate is stamped. The original birth certificate is on security bank paper. It's got all the designs around the outside of a birth certificate like a security on the stock exchange. It's on security paper. And therefore, the birth certificate is a security on the New York Stock Exchange to buy and sell your body. Your physical body is being bought and sold on the New York Stock Exchange because on the bottom of a birth certificate, you will see in small letters that all birth certificates immediately go to the Department of Commerce. It is the property of the Department of Commerce. Why? Because you are a human resource. You are not a man or woman. Man or woman under the what is called the Stiles Dictionary in England, if you go to the library, especially a law library, and get the British Stiles Dictionary, which means it's a book that tells you the correct use of words in law, the correct way to say something in a court of law. It's called the Stiles Dictionary. And if you look in there, you will see that you are not considered a man or woman. You are considered a male or female because a man or woman is under law, under the British Stiles Dictionary, a man or a woman is masculine and feminine.
Mm-hmm.
But the law book says, but if you are an animal, if it's a dog or an animal, it's male or female. If it's a man or a woman, then it's a masculine or feminine child. And so today on all your ID, it says, are you male or female? Why? Because you are a human resource. You're not a man or woman. You don't have any rights of a man or woman. You are just a slave. That's all you've ever been. That's all you now. And that's all you ever going to be. Period.
Well, let me ask something, too, because I've seen some of your videos, and it says that you can actually get money against your birth certificate. Can you explain that to everybody who may be like,
and how
can it happen?
No. What I was saying is that your birth certificate on the New York Stock Exchange is worth many millions of dollars, and if you can ever get your original birth certificate, I'm not talking about a certified copy.
Oh.
But if you get the actual original birth certificate, you will see on the back of the birth certificate all kinds of stamps have been stamped on the back of your actual original birth certificate because it's a security on the New York Stock Exchange. It's a security. And so it's written on security bank paper, and you are the security for the body social. That's why when you retire, you get Social Security. No, you don't get Social Security. You are the security for the body social, which we call the United States Corporation. It's a very interesting and deep subject of law that 99% of the people on the face of the earth have no idea in the world how this stuff works.
Well, you gave
no
me a scenario this morning. You gave me a scenario this morning that, like, if my house was in foreclosure, let's just say, I could go and get money from my birth certificate.
But now I think that the laws have been changed since 9/11.
Okay.
9/11 was instituted for one purpose, so that America could be finally changed over to a new kind of law. After the 1868, the United States was under a constitution called the Constitution of the United States of America. But after 1868, after the Civil War, there was no United States of America left.
Okay.
So they set up a whole new kind of government, and they called it public policy. Go back and read the law books, and you will see, the history books will tell you, after 1868, we're no longer under a United States of America Constitution. We're under something called public policy. Therefore, from 1868 onward, you don't have statesmen, you have politicians who make policy. And the policy from the politicians is backed up with the strong arm of the police. And so, therefore, we are now under, no longer under, since 1868, we're no longer under an American Constitution. You are under public policy, politicians, police. And now, of course, with the coming of 2001, with 9/11, public policy has now been mutated. It's not the same way anymore. A public policy doesn't work the same way, because 9/11 was similar to the Civil War, in that the 9/11 changed America again. So we're not fully public policy. We're now under something, the new government of the United States is no longer called public policy. Even though we still use the term in law, public policy, it is the new country of America. And America's brand new. It's under a new form of government. It's not public policy.
Okay, we're going to pause just for a second. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHC 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, Talking with Jordan Maxwell. If you're on the phone line and have a question or a comment, press 1. Mr. Maxwell is only going to be with us another 18 minutes. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, Mr. A.J. Houston is manning the chat room today. If you'd like, post your comments or questions in the chat room, and A.J. Houston will present them to Mr. Maxwell. We're going to go to the phone lines. Area code 31.
All right, hold on. Before you do that, I want to make one more point.
Yes,
I want to give people an understanding of the way this stuff works.
Mm-hmm.
The economy is not what you think it is.
Okay.
Money is not what you think it is. It doesn't work. Banks don't do what you think they do. Insurance companies don't do what you think they do. Let me give you an example.
Yeah.
I think it's an important example for people to understand. I said to you today, if you are a painting contractor, and I want my office painted,
mm-hmm.
I call you. You come over, look at my job, and if you decide to do it, you give me what is called an estimate. If I like the estimate, then I give you permission to do the job. This, we're talking commerce now. This is the way business works.
Mm-hmm.
After you have painted my office, you come to me with a bill. And the bill is for $100. That's what we agreed upon. And so I now owe you $100. Why? Because you just gave me a bill in commerce.
Mm-hmm.
You gave me an actual commercial bill that says I owe you $100. It's called a bill in commerce for $100. I reach in my pocket and I pull out a $100 bill and I give it to you. And you go off thinking I paid you. No, I didn't pay you anything. You gave me a bill for $100. I gave you a $100 bill. You understand?
I
didn't pay you anything. You now owe me $100. It's called a $100 bill. If you had given me a bill for $20, I would have given you a $20 bill. If it was for $10, I'll give you a $10 bill, because I am not paying you. I am neutralizing the debt. You owe me. I owe you $100. Now you owe me $100 because I gave you a bill, and so I never paid you for anything. That's why when you buy a house or a car or any other kind of equipment, You do not own it. You did not pay for it. You neutralized the debt, but you did not pay for the thing. That's why you do not own your house. You never own your house. And when it's completely paid off, you do not own it. The state owns it because you never paid for it. You only have an equitable interest in it. You have a certain amount of equity in it, but you don't own it. You don't own nothing since 1868 because you have never paid for anything. You have only neutralized the debt with another bill called a $100, $50 bill. Understand? That's the way maritime admiralty banks work. It's a real deep story about how we got in the mess we're in, and it's not something that's important because it has nothing to do with football.
So you're talking about that maritime admiralty law.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the law of money. There are two kinds of law on the earth. There's the law of the land, and we hear that term. Well, that's the law of the land. No, law of the land means something in relation to law of the water.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's only two things on the earth, land and water. So if you have a law of the land, then there must be a law of the water. And there is. It's called banking. Banking is called the law of water. That's why we say money goes through your hands like water. No, money is water. It's the liquid asset, the cash flow. It's water. The ebb and tides. And so once you understand money is in law, money is called maritime admiralty.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have an admiral in the Navy. It has to do with the sea. And once you understand that money is water, and it's based on water, it's the cash flow, the liquid asset. And that's why it goes into a bank. Where do you find a bank? You find banks on both sides of a river.
Mm-hmm.
They're called river banks. And what does a river bank do? It directs the flow of the currency because your money is called currency because it's the current that's flowing, the cash flow. And so money is water. Well, you are 90% water. Therefore, the money is based on you. You are the cash flow, the liquid asset, or the human product. The human resource is the word. Human resource, like rubber, iron, oil, and you. You are nothing more than a resource. You are not considered by law to be a man or a woman. On all of your ID, you need to understand that even on your identification, there's two of you. You don't understand there's two of you. There's the one your mother and father produced with God's help. That's your personal flesh and blood self.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another you. There's two of you. There's the one that the government controls and has control over. No one, no law on the earth. There is no law or any government or anyone that has control over you personally.
Mm-hmm.
Understand that. Your mother doesn't even know what you're thinking. Your parents don't even know what you're going to do.
Right.
And no matter what they think, you're going to do whatever you're going to do anyway, and they don't have no control. Well, if your mama don't have any control, you know the government don't have any control over you.
Very true.
Because we're talking about your personal self. But the government does have a control over your business person, who you are in the world, representing yourself to the world. Now, that has to do with government. Therefore, there's two of you. There's the private you. And the public you. Well, the public you is what the government controls. The private you, nobody can control that.
We're going to have to get some of these phone calls, Mr. Maxwell. We're going to go to area code 318. Good afternoon.
Well, you're
going to
miss a lot. Yeah.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. You're on center stage. 318. Good afternoon. You're on center stage.
Who's Kerry?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Bond, explain about the Social Security card, the number on the back of it.
Okay. Mr. Maxwell, did you hear that question?
Yep.
Okay.
Sure did.
Okay.
Yeah, on the back
explain
of your social on the back of your social say it again?
No. We're waiting on you.
Okay. On the back of the Social Security card is a series of numbers. usually, but not always, usually those numbers are in red.
Mm-hmm.
But whether they're in red or not, the reason why they would, some are in red is because those numbers on the back of the card, they represent your blood. Your actual blood is being represented on the back of a Social Security card. They are blood numbers. And those numbers represent your blood and your flesh and your body. While the numbers on the front of the Social Security card is your membership in a corporation called the United States Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the back of the Social Security card are the numbers that represent your body.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to call the New York Stock Exchange, and there's a way to do it, but it's not that easy.
Okay.
But if you know how to do it, you call the Stock Exchange, and you tell them, I was cleaning my mother's closet or my grandmother's garage, and I found an old security, and I want to know if it's of any value. And they'll say, well, give us a security number. All securities have a number. So you read them the number on the back of the Social Security card.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will put it in the computer and come back and tell you, yes, that is worth about $6 million on the New York Stock Exchange. And the stock is called, and they will give you your name. And you say, well, then the person that it's made on, yes, is worth $6 million to this person whose name is on the front. So your security, you are then a security because it's worth $6 million. Therefore, you are a security for what we call the body social. That's why we call it social security.
Hmm.
The social security is not socially to secure you. No, you are the security for the body social called the United States Corporation. Understand how this stuff works. And I'm not saying this is evil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying this is crooked or bad. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is if you're going to be a citizen in this country, understand how the law works. Understand what the words mean. You know, if you have a checkbook and you write a check, when you write your name on the check, on the line at the bottom of the check, when you write your name, the attorneys will tell you, if you're in a law, some kind of problem in court, the attorneys will tell you, read the fine print. Read the fine print in the contract. Well, what did they talk about? And then they will tell you later on that you have to sign on the dotted line. Read the fine print and sign on the dotted line. What are you talking about? Well, if you look at a check and take a magnifying glass and look at the check you're getting ready to write and look at the line in which you're going to sign your name, it is not a line. It's a fine print.
Mm-hmm.
And get a magnifying glass and read the fine print.
Right.
And you will see the fine print is saying something, and you are signing your name over the fine print because you didn't read the fine print.
Let's go back
so
to
it's
the
not
fine
a line.
I'm going to say fine print. Let's go back to the phone lines. Area code 323, good afternoon. You're on Center Stage.
Yes, I wanted to know if Mr. Maxwell was aware of the term collateral damage.
Of course. Yeah, and the whole idea of collateral damage, it goes back to a maritime admiralty concepts, and it's used in both commerce, business, and war, and everything else. So. Yeah, it's a big subject, but it's not really as important as what I'm trying to get across is the basic conceptual idea about how money and governments and banks really work. And at this point, I'd like to also add, this particular subject that we're talking about is not something, first of all, I didn't say it was evil or bad. I'm just saying this is the way it works. And second, it's not something that I'm interested in. I knew about this stuff 40 years ago, how banks really work and how money is really produced and how this stuff actually works. I'm more interested in theology, religion, and philosophy.
Okay,
but
then let's try to go there very quickly then, since you're interested in religion. I understand that you say that as far as the Bible is concerned, that you really don't believe that there ever was a Jesus.
You're right. That's exactly
what
I said.
And why do you say that?
And I said that because if given an opportunity in a court of law where I am not molested but allowed to speak and have my say in a court of law, mm-hmm. I think I could prove conclusively that Jesus as a man never lived. But I'm not saying that the Bible is has no value, is worthless. No, I didn't say that. I just answered the question what Jesus as a man, I believe, did not ever exist. I do not believe there was ever a man named Jesus. And I think I can make a very good case in any court.
Based
for
on
that.
What?
Based on the actual historical records
okay.
kept in the Roman Empire, the British Empire, throughout all of Europe. There is on my website I have under my links a link to a website which has over 6,600 pages of documented proof about where religions have come from: Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. All three are referred to as the people of the book. When you're talking internationally and traveling around the world and speaking to audiences, you need to use the correct term which is accepted around the world. And so when you're talking about Judaism, Christianity, or Islam, people are referred to as the people of the book. They are the people of the book. Why? Because both Judaism, Christianity, and Islam reply and require a book. The Bible is the book for Christians, the Torah and the holy books of the Jews, and then you have the Quran for the Islamic. So all
and, you know, to not discriminate, you say you really don't believe, as far as Islam is concerned, that Muhammad ever existed.
I'm totally convinced Muhammad never lived. There was no such man as Muhammad. Totally. I think the entire Islamic religion was dreamt up by the Vatican during the 13th, 14th, and 15th century, just as I would also say that Judaism is not a B.C. religion. Judaism did not, there was no such a thing as ancient Jerusalem. No such a thing ever existed as the ancient Hebrew and ancient Jerusalem. There was no ancient Jerusalem, ever, period, and never existed. That was dreamt up during what we call the early Middle Ages in Europe, the Vatican. The monks in the monasteries were dreaming up a foundation for Roman Catholicism to dominate the planet. And so they dreamt up a story called Ancient Jerusalem. And they put in the stories about Moses and King Solomon and King David. None of those people ever existed. And when I confront the rabbis, which I do all the time, I go to the Simon Wiesenthal Center for Holocaust Studies and the Jewish universities and sit with the rabbis and talk with them for hours, and they will tell you, yeah, you're right. The whole thing was dreamt up in the Middle Ages. Yeah, there is no Moses. There was no Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. There was no this. The Jews never crossed the Red Sea. It's just a story. That's why the Bible is called the greatest story ever told. It's not the greatest collection of facts. It's a story. Mm-hmm. But once you understand the story as an encoded story, now you begin to really do your homework and find out where these religions really came from.
Wow.
And then for the first time you will see that both the people of the book, Jews, Christians, and Islam, were developed in Rome under the Roman Empire, under the Caesars of Rome. And that's why Julius Caesar's initials are JC, like Jesus Christ. There's an encoded hidden system here that only spending 50 years will give you an idea. If you haven't studied it for 50 years, then you have no idea in the world what's really going on here. And I'm just trying to educate you and tell you that you have no idea in the world how this world really works and what the name of the tune really is and who founded this country and where it's going today and who Obama really is. And how the churches and the Catholic Church and the Jewish Church and the synagogues, you really need to know where this stuff really came from, because we're now in serious trouble, and I've been talking about it for some 50 years. It's about time people start to wake up and understand nothing is what you think it is. Nothing.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. How quickly an hour does go. Mr.
Mr. Maxwell, I hate that you're just going to conclude at this hour point because the phone lines are jammed, the chat room is busy, but I know you have to go. Why don't you tell them how they can get your materials, your DVDs, and your other materials that you have available?
I'd be happy to. Just go on my website to Jordan. It's spelled J-O-R-D-A-N, not
mm-hmm.
O-N. Jordan like the river.
Mm-hmm.
And Maxwell like the coffee, jordanmaxwell.com. And at the top of the page, you'll see what's new. A button says what's new. It's got all kinds of new stuff I'm doing, videos, et cetera. But I would suggest go through the whole website. You'd be surprised. 90% of the people that I talk to have went on my website have seen nothing. They don't go to the web. They don't go to my website. I mean, they go to the website, but they don't go to any of the research pages. They don't go to the audio video. They didn't go to the bio, resume. They didn't see in the pictures. They didn't see this. They didn't go to the links. They didn't see anything. So if you're going to go to my website.
For those who may be interested in researching with you, you were talking earlier last year about starting a research club. How is that coming along?
Well, it's not. I killed the whole idea because it costs money, and I asked people for contributions to help me to set up a new website, a new operation, which I was going to stream new videos, audios, and do all kinds of great stuff in a private association, and I asked for contributions, and in the past 2 years, I got $30.
Wow.
So nobody really cares to donate any money to Jordan Maxwell to do nothing, and the reason why is because most people hearing me don't know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They've never heard such things as Jordan Maxwell talking about subjects they've never heard of before. So he must be crazy. He must be on drugs or something because it don't have nothing to do with football or basketball. Well, I'm 70 years old, and I'm not going to be here much longer. If you're wise,
you know,
you will listen to me while I'm here.
Yes. And he's a wealth of knowledge. Again, tell them how to get to your website.
Just go to jordanmaxwell.com.
Okay. There's a lot of good material out there, you all. I've been to the website and I studied it intensively. He has a lot of good information for anyone who's interested in subjects like the ones we discussed earlier. Hopefully, Mr. Maxwell will come back and join us again. He talks on issues like the Jesuits, the Vatican, politics. And so maybe we can get him to come back again. Mr. Maxwell, thank you so much for spending this hour with us, and we hope that you'll come again.
Thank you, ma'am, and I will for sure. Give me a call, and I'll be there.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Jordan Maxwell. Our second hour is going to be spent dissecting what Mr. Maxwell said. We're going to open up the phone lines to Kohan Yashabaya and Mahir L. to join us. Y'all heard Mr. Maxwell. A lot of information out there. The hour was just too short. I couldn't get it all in. I tried, but
Thanks for trying, Carrie.
I try, but he's 70 and he just does not have the energy to do long interviews like 2-hour interviews like what we do around here. So he has promised me that he will come back again and do the show again. So that's a good thing. So maybe next time we'll talk about the Vatican and the Jesuits and some of the other things that I know he's into.
That's his specialty. Yeah, I'm gonna say that he's a well credible person to have on your show. I've studied his voice myself. I mean, a lot of ones have studied the conspiracy theory and studied Mr. Gordon Maxwell's material along with David Icke and others. And I myself, I found the man's stuff to be accurate. You might have had some of the same conversation. Don't it sound strange here coming from a white person, things we discussed, and you said, I just couldn't put my mind around that, but what about that?
Yeah. I mean,
you know, that's deep. And like I said, that's because when people say, not that I don't believe, it's that I understand a lot of things that people, like Mr. Gordon said, if you haven't done the research, I've got about 35 years into this, close to 40.
Mm-hmm.
Into that. I know what he's talking about. Brother Mahara, likewise, Brother Dewar. This is why we feel what we feel and talk what we talk, because we've done the research, we've walked the walk, and we've done the talk. And when you talk about this, people are not going to support this. They want the other stuff that's easy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want the truth. They want easy stuff, and this is not easy.
No, it's not easy at all. You know, we opened up talking to Mr. Maxwell about the New World Order and how it connects with what's going on in the Middle East, and he said that the New World Order has been in effect for a while, but I think for those of us who's new to the studying of the New World Order,
it all seems to be coming into focus now, whereas back maybe 30, 40 years ago, people could really not relate to it. Can you all see the connection between the New World Order and the government over in the Middle East starting to collapse one by one like dominoes?
I would like to comment on that. I don't know if my brother Mihara, but I myself, I'm 65, and I've been in politics since I was about 13. So, yeah, I can see the connection because it's a repeated thing. You know, the guy said, if a thing works until you find a way to stop it, keep on doing what you're doing. And it has worked in time past, and history is kind of repeating itself. We're seeing the fall because one must go down and offer nothing to come up. So this is a thing that has to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, here, what do you think? Mr. I think I have a Mahir, do I have your phone lines open? Mahir L.
Karen, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay. No, I'm like Cole. I'm somewhat versed with Jordan Maxwell's information for a number of years actually. Even before I came to Texas, and so I've been here since 98. And I remember that people would bring out videos or audio of Mr. Maxwell. It was him and a couple other folks that whenever they got together, it was always this high powered. And so he's right though. So I agree with Mr. Maxwell had just said. You know, he's been doing this for a while, and at the same time, you know, it is kind of interesting that you know, it's really time for people to wake up, actually, and to know how things really work, you know, not what we've been left to assume or guess, because, you know, there's a term in law that also applies to, and that's called prima facie.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to be so.
It's not.
And until it is challenged, and then it becomes that which the two said parties agree upon. So everything it appears to be so, like, you know, I had a thing with parking tickets many, many years ago in New York, and it was the same thing. You know, it's like you owe this, that, and the other. And so I, from some of the things that I've learned, and especially listening to some of Mr. Maxwell's works that he had done, I mean, he put together his series that he had done, I used just some of that knowledge, that information. And did you know what they said when they sent me written correspondence back? They agreed with me and said that the tickets were found to be facially deficient. And I used the term prima facie. And it dismissed it, all of it. Just zeroed
okay,
it out.
Okay, first of all, I think you're going
to
have to catch the audience up to speed as to what you're talking about. Jordan Maxwell says when you receive a ticket and the ticket is in all capital letters, can you pick up right there?
Yeah, go ahead. No, I missed that part of when he was saying that, but he had said that years ago. So Mr. Maxwell had always been talking about that, and there's other literature and things that came along with that as well. I won't say that I used everything that I had learned from his series and others. I used a combination of, but I do know that when I sent it to New York City's sheriff's department, which is the one that sent out these things about the tickets and as such, talking about you owe them for parking and all this other kind of insanity, you know, and what they can do and garnish you and all this. When I sent this response, I don't remember exactly, because it's been many years ago, I don't exactly remember all of the language that I used, but they sent the reply was swift. And when they sent it back, basically the words were the tickets were found to be facially deficient. That's the exact words that they used. And then they showed zero balance at the bottom of this letter from
what
the
was your argument, though?
Office. Was
you're
that
not...
they were saying that I had owed for parking. You know, like in New York City, they have like, well, here we have it in Dallas, too, alternate side of the street parking and all this other kind of stuff. And so, you know, whether you're 5 minutes late or whatever, you come downstairs and the parking attendant has already written you a ticket.
Right.
Okay, and each time they wrote a ticket, it was like $25. Well, I had a bunch of those. A lot of them. Okay? And so they were threatening to come by, take the car, and all this other kind of stuff, and some other things that they, according to law, they claim that they could actually do. Well, I challenged the whole premise of this thing about the tickets and had said this was all prima facie. Well, they replied back, someone replied back and said the tickets were found to be facially deficient and had zeroed out the balance and never heard from them since.
Wow. So that's one way you can do it. And you also challenge the fact that the name is in all capital letters. Isn't that one of the things that he brings up about if your bills or if your tickets or if your driver's license?
Everything is like that.
Beg your pardon?
Everything that they do is like that. Everything.
Okay, can you bring the audience
that
up to speak with?
You are corporate property.
Yeah.
And so because
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
What I was trying to say is what you heard Mr. Maxwell say about there's two parts of you. There's the private, and then there's the other part that here you are, the corporate. And so everywhere you go, I mean, you get an ID at work, whatever they give you, look at how your name is. Look at how they put your name in all uppercase. That's what they do. I mean, it's everything is like that. That they do. Social Security card, everything is like that.
And that's put that way for what reason?
Because you're incorporated.
Incorporate.
Right. And so, go ahead.
If I may interject something, anyone happen to have a Black's Law Dictionary, go to page 310, 310, look under the word citizen, and read that entire thing. I went, when Gordon was talking, we happen to have the book in our libraries. I went and got the book and pulled it out. He's on point. Page 310, Black's Law Dictionary, 4th edition, what I happen to have. He's right on point.
Wow.
Yeah, right on point. So, see, these things people understand, and Brother Mahan, I'm so glad you're on board. I'm glad that we study these things. There's certain things called, now, this is why I write a lot of time in Lurkey. I say, why do you write, what's your name in Lurkey? Because I'm not a corporation. You know,
right.
I'm an individual.
Exactly.
And then, but I do capital, that means that I'm corporate.
Correct.
You know what I'm
saying? And not only that.
Do you remember the Wizard of Oz? Carrie?
Yeah. Right.
1939.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and look at the movie and look at the straw man. This all to what the government is doing. All that's about the government and you. The yellow brick road, going to see the wizard. Look at it and then go check it out. We said on our website, Brother Mahan, it's called Alexandria. And it broke all this down. Those are symbols. Each one of those entities in that movie is a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about
right.
how it plays in your life. Hollywood
right.
again.
And not, just that, Terry. I remember years ago, and I believe one of the first people that I actually heard explain this whole thing very well was Mr. Maxwell when he talked about to emancipate. And I kind of still remember how he was pronouncing the word because he was placing an emphasis on it. Well, at that time, I was compelled to go out and I got the Black's Law Dictionary, I got the Ballantines, Bouvier's, got all of that, and I looked up what was the legal definition of the word emancipate. Because, you know, we have people of color, we're always talking about, Emancipation Proclamation.
Yes.
And we were freed from slavery. And it's like, that's not what you think it is. Look up the legal definition of the word emancipate. Look that up first. And it basically tells you that someone has given you certain liberties while maintaining parental rights over you. You're not free. That's the legal definition of the word. We're talking straight. So, you know, there's the language we use in the street. And then there is the language that is used when we're in their so-called court of law. And they allow us to use Daniel Webster's definition of words, which we think that's what they're using, and only to find out it's not. It's the same word, yes, but it's a whole different meaning in there. They say the Constitution is 100% without question written and legal vernacular.
Yeah.
It's not Daniel Webster. Daniel Webster wasn't even around when that thing was written.
Lawyer terms. Another thing, Kerry, I don't want to cut in, but that I do want to get your dialogue with Mr. Maxwell on the slavery thing.
Mm-hmm.
I will, because he missed a little bit on the points about that, and that's a feat on that prejudice side, because in my book, I bring out some points about that. Slavery did not only pertain to black people or Africans. It pertained to anybody who was enslaved, black or white.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't bring it out. And most times they dodge that bullet. Sometimes they like about him, he dodged that bullet, because slavery did not, because last night on one of the late night shows, they said that less than 80% of whites ever owned slaves, and that was maybe one or two. And I can show you numbers where black people owned hundreds of them, stuff like that. So they don't bother that because it knocked them down in their ethnic understanding. But realize that we was a very powerful people, and that we brought whites to America. Whites didn't bring us. We started the thing coming to America. Folks don't want to digest. Well, I don't care them. I have the documents. Like, I have the documents and research to validate what I'm saying. But we want to ride that sympathy wagon, that pity party, feel sorry for us, and the white man owe us. The white man, like, once again, owe us nothing. It means by the maritime law, that friend's flag, God, she done, that's what it means. Hanging in a courtroom, anywhere, that means you operate on maritime law. And he brought out will today. He speaks about the flag. We know you see that flag in the courtroom or wherever you see it at, you're in trouble.
Well, see, I hate the hour came and went so fast because...
Hey, man, I just got back. You've been on about 10 minutes. I missed part of it, but I warned him because I have been a follower of him and David Icke and Duke and other ones because these guys brought out, along with Doc Ben, Barishango, them ones we would talk about behind closed doors. You couldn't say it a lot of times in public because a lot of times the general public can't handle a lot of truth. They don't understand because they don't go and do what? The research.
Okay.
It's hard to talk to people about religion and politics. They will not do the research because they got their own preconceived idea how it's supposed to be. But Brother Harold, I know we've done studies on Islam, Judaism, Christianity, and you say, well, why don't you believe it about? Because these are the people you got to talk with the people of the book, like you said. And that's why I talk, the people of the book. You have to understand that book. And
I wasn't really going into religion, but I knew that if we got too heavy into religion, the hour would really be gone, and we would just kind of be all over the page. But, you know, he talks a lot about the Vatican. You know, he says that...
And we know that the Vatican has 52 miles of books underground that they control. The Vatican has that much material underground that they control of all the knowledge. And anybody's been there can tell you, if they got an underground Vatican, it's about 52 miles of books.
Well, I think some of the things that I picked up that he said about the Vatican, he really doesn't think very highly of them. He says that it's a very dark presence over there.
Anybody can tell you about the Vatican, that's a very, it has a public side, it has a dark side. Anybody can tell you about it. And most of them are orchestrated, most religions are orchestrated out of the Vatican. And
right.
It's designed for what? Control.
He called it demonic, an evil corporation, nothing holy, he said, in the Vatican.
Bible and talk about it. Here's the Holy Father, and you got a Holy Mother of God and all these things, and you got all these things going. Yet they break the right of celibacy. You know, they had all this molestation and all these abuse come through. Come on, man.
Well, I mean, that's what I was hoping. that's what I was hoping to touch on, but the hour went so fast. But you know, I'd never heard that about the Vatican, that there was nothing holy in Vatican, and that most criminal organizations, I believe, he said, is in the Vatican, which I found that very shocking.
The Vatican is the only reason it has its own army, air force, and navy. The Vatican has its own. It's considered a country. The Vatican is considered a country.
It has
army, navy. And Air Force.
And it has its own money.
That's true.
We talked on the phone today or the other day I talked to him. I don't remember which one it was. When he brought up, if you pay attention to The Godfather 3, at the beginning, I forgot the name of the character, but he's being blessed by the Pope over there. Anybody remember that movie and what, you know, remember he, that was it? Carleone or whatever his name was, that he was over there talking to the Pope and being blessed by the Pope in the movie.
You know what I like about what Gordon said, and I saw the movie Tom Hanks in it, standing on the Pope. I said, that's Gordon Maxwell, because that's how he did his presentation. I said, oh, wow, I can't believe this. That's Gordon Maxwell. That's how he always started his presentation, the way that Tom Hanks came out.
Somebody in the chat room said, how large is the Vatican Library? Does anybody know the answer to that question?
They have 52 miles worth of books under the Vatican.
52 miles.
Just a child brought that out by last month. I estimated 52 miles.
Wow. I mean, it seems like, really, Gordon,
Jordan Maxwell has really been beat by Hollywood because, I mean, he mentioned several movies, The National Treasure. He mentioned The Da Vinci Code, and there was even another movie, The Matrix. You know, all kind of, you know, kind of bit off of what he's been doing. But
he's correct, because anybody studying his works, when you see certain signs and symbols, that's what you heard DeWire and myself and Brother Mihara talk about, signs and symbols. You got to know signs and symbols. And he talks about it. When you see him, I knew it was Jordan Maxwell when I saw he answered, because he don't got to know to do it like that.
He doesn't want.
He does a presentation. He starts off breaking down all the symbols, the dollar bill, the Washington Monument, and all these things. He breaks down what they mean. The phallic symbol on top of the church. That's what you call a steeple. That's
right.
A phallic. That means the man rule. It's you see my face. It's an erected penis.
Mm-hmm.
What it means that man rules here.
And where is that at?
On all your churches.
Wow.
The steeple. That is called a tap pillar. That is a raised penis, like the Washington Monument.
Uh-huh.
And God breaks all that down. The symbol on the laws and how it's numbered. He goes through all of that.
Well, and not just that, Carrie, to also add to the equation, on top of most mosques in the world where they have the top of, they call the minaret. The minaret looks like a dome, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the dome is a circumcised penis.
Hmm. Never heard that before.
That's
right. And though it may say it's a monotheistic religion, many of the mosques let you know what cult out of the Arabian order they actually belong to by either they have the crescent, which means that they're of the lunatic cult, or they have the stem with the three balls coming out of the top of the circumcised dome or the penis. And that is to symbolize three daughters.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah,
well, tell me
this. This is the kind of stuff that we studied about. So things like what he said. Now, you and I, Carrie, have had conversations offline as far as in the area of spirituality and understanding, which you know that I'm rock solid on. However, the symbols that they use to put before us of these buildings that we walk inside of, that's the world that's different than what we how we conversate. That's why you have to be very careful at times of your surroundings.
Repeat that again. You have to be very careful
of
what surroundings?
Your surroundings.
You have, this is why you must pay attention and be careful of the surroundings that you yourself end up, that you walk in, you're walking into the doors of many of these places. People are talking and sounding like they're saying the same thing you're saying.
Yeah.
However, it's a very different kind of world, and only those who are the initiates really know the symbolism of the place you just set your foot inside of. They know.
So you need
don't.
Some discernment.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHT 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, talking with Jordan Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell was with us for the first hour, but he had to leave us because he's 70 now and he does not do long interviews. And so we're just kind of continuing and piggybacking off of some of the things that Mr. Maxwell brought up in the first hour. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial us up at 347-850-8390. And again, press 1. A reminder, Mr. A.J. Houston is in the chat room today, so if you have a question or a comment, you can also post it up in chat.
Okay,
and
sorry about that. I'm back.
I'm sorry?
That was Mahir. He's back.
Who, A.J.?
No, it was Mahir.
No, Mahir.
Okay. Okay, and A.J. will present it to the panel. Talking, I think y'all mentioned a few minutes ago about Mr. Maxwell, the presentation about the dollar. Can y'all explain what the presentation he did about the dollar detailed? What was that about?
It broke down that in Latin, what it means that's New World Order. It represents the pyramid, the eye, the Illuminati. It breaks down the various, the human eagle that's in there to deal with the Bohemian society. He breaks on with the numbers, what it means, called the Federal Reserve. He goes to the eagle with the arrows in his hand, in his feet, and the fly, and the, what you call it, the, we call it the Ennis Miles and all these things, about the Rothschild family crest. He goes through a lot of things. You just need to go on and check out his website and watch his breakdown of the dollar bill and why it's so significant.
Okay. Mr. C.D.
Sure.
McGee says in the chat room, so was the movie Angels and Demons close to truth as far as the books and the air pressure chambers? I didn't see that movie.
Well, you didn't see the movies, and like I said, I only caught the trailers up, and I knew then what was going. But remember, you got to look at Hollywood. You got to be able to read what the signs and symbols. If you that was a book I like to invite people to get if they would get it. It's called Signs and Symbols of Primordial Man by Albert Church Ward. Signs and Symbols of Primordial Man, Albert Church Ward.
Explain the Illuminati in connection with the New World Order and how all this plays together with what we're seeing.
Well, Brother Mayor, you want to tackle that up?
Yeah, let me say, first of all, okay, the Illuminati, okay, is not a new thing, okay?
No.
It's people are thinking it's new. These guys all of a sudden get wealthy, incredibly wealthy, and then with wealth they wanted power. No. It's a lot more than that, okay? When they talk about the bloodlines that they descend from, and this is where people like David Icke comes into the picture, because David Icke definitely deals with that from a side that, again, a lot of people are not prepared to receive that kind of information that way. The same is with a lot of Jordan Maxwell was talking about. People are not prepared for that level of information like that. For some reason, they're just not. They don't want to hear it, okay? Well, these folks, when you talk about a blue blood does not mean anybody and everyone Caucasian. They don't mean that. That's not what they're talking about when they use that kind of language. They're talking about those who are descended from who we may say, if you're using the Bible for example, those who are descended from the fallen ones. The word called Nephilim means they were the mighty ones. They came down and they subdued the earth, okay? And through women, these women gave birth to their children who they themselves are the offspring of.
And they're called mighty men of valor. In the Bible.
Yeah, mighty men of valor. They were well-renowned, well-known. Well-renowned is the terms that we got today, where you find that mostly all of the presidents and kings and rulers throughout the earth, including as far away as China and emperors and all of them, they're all connected by that same bloodline. So regardless of whether the fact that they may look different, Asiatic, they can even look African, as far all the way down to Zululand, okay, that many of them who has risen up to so-called rule or take charge or run most of the regimes, okay, especially where there's been a history of oppression, you find that those individuals have laid claim to this royal bloodline, and we using conventional means and methods to try to comprehend what could they possibly be talking about. This person is black, straight from Zululand, looks like everybody else there, but what he is really talking about isn't anything conventional of what we have been taught. So it goes way back.
Well, let me ask
back,
you.
Before Babylon.
You know, people as of late are always talking about the entertainment industry, and they're saying that this person or that person are in the Illuminati. They oftentimes are talking about rappers and entertainers, like singers. You know, I won't call any names because I don't like to go off of hearsay.
Right.
But
right.
They'll say, like, this person or that person did a blood sacrifice of a family member in order to get their status in the industry, basically saying they sold their soul to the devil and that they're part of the Illuminati now. What do you know about that, and how? What can you say on that?
Let me make
a
statement,
okay,
signs and symbols. I want you to go back and look at this new, the game suit that comes on where they're talking about, on BET. It's called Game.
I'm not
look
sure.
At what they're wearing under their shirt. They're wearing skulls with sequins in it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people wearing skulls and bones on their clothing in the entertainment field, which caused the children to start wearing skulls and bones out here. We of old school know the skull and bones is a secret society. What do you talking about, like Snoop Dogg and Dog running around with a shirt on with a skull head on it? quarterback for the Sabres, he had one on the other night. The basketball player on one other night.
But didn't you say all that type of stuff has energy attached to it?
Sure does. Where did the word Illuminati, where did it come from? The Luciferian order. Where's your computer bio set up on? Luciferian technology.
Correct. And even if you go back into really old history, well before they were ever even called that, just look at ancient cultures or cultures from ancient history. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah.
And you will find that the Zohar, the Zoroasters, these are really old names. What was their prime symbol? Everything is about symbols. What was their prime symbol that they used? Fire. They were highly advanced. They had math, science, alchemy, they had all those things going on. But what was their symbol that they used? The same thing with Prometheus of the Greeks. What was he credited with doing? Going up into the heavens and stealing the fire from the gods and bringing the fire down to earth. What are they talking about? Knowledge. That's what they're talking about. And they say that they are the people of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
See, so this whole concept, so these people were talking this way long before there was some well-written documentation trying to tell us what hell was all about. Hell, when it was originally written, was not a place that was fire and brimstone and intense heat. Hell used to be a place that was accredited with intensely cold, which was, hence, Northern Europe,
mm-hmm.
where many of those of that blue blood descendancy actually came down from and were known for doing the human sacrifices, acts of cannibalism, and a few other things right up there in the northern part where all the snow and ice came down in Europe. Too cold. So the other people who were not from that region referred to that like Holland. Holland meant the land of hell. That was one of the definitions of that word. Belgium, the Belgians. Bell is one of the names of, quote-unquote, the adversary, or what people will call Satan or the devil.
Right,
okay?
Bell is.
Paris. Paris in France. Now, I'm just giving you an example, Carrie. Paris in France. Paris is supposed to mean, and even though that's a French word, but what's its original origin? When you look at many of the people of France who were, over time populated that area, came from the so-called Middle East long time ago, before Islam, long time ago. And so the words, in terms of their original meanings and definitions, such as Paris is similar to the Hebrew word parazot in the book of Daniel, the lawless one. He would be breaking all laws. So parazot is plural for lawbreaker or the lawless one. So here it is, we have these names of these places, and people who are coming from the continent, going over, meeting these people, say, wow, these are really some strange and weird people. They drink blood, they do this, they sacrifice people. They saw that. The same thing if you go to Ireland, you know, Belfast, one of the names of their months in the Irish calendar, Beltran. So they're kind of letting you know it's all in the words. So if you can't, if you don't study the etymology, and the physiology of words, you're not going to even know what's really being said in front of you all day long. Although definitions may have changed or been added to, it still does not change the original vibration
never
of what
changes.
The word meant. Like
never
gay
changes.
Was never a noun. I don't care how many times people use it as a noun, it will never be a noun.
No, it was
because
not,
that is
definitely.
Not the etymology of that word.
Okay. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLAC's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, talking with Jordan Maxwell. Well, Mr. Maxwell was with us for the first hour, but he had to leave us because he's 70 now and he does not do long interviews. But he did spend the first hour with us, and we're kind of piggybacking off some of the things that were said in the first hour. If you're in the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, Mr. A.J. Houston is manning the chat room today, so if you're listening via the Internet, post up your questions or comment in the chat room, and Mr. A.J. Houston will present them to the panel. A.J., I believe Mr. McGee, I think his name was, did he still have a question about the Vatican, or is he clear on that?
Well, he said thanks for the answer. But there was another guy that asked, you know, like how large was it? I know it was stated that there were so many books and miles of books in the Vatican, but he asked how large is the Vatican Library?
Well, that would just go type it in. It's not a secret. You can type it in, and it'll tell you. But it's you know, up under the Vatican is another city, and it talks about both sides. Now, Barry Sanger, one of my mentors, said that he happens to go and he lets you go in so far, and it's another city underground. It's almost like people have been to Austin. You've been to Austin, Texas, AJ?
Yeah.
You went inside the Capitol over there?
Yeah, I've been there. Uh-huh.
Do you know that there's another city under Austin, 11 miles wide and long, underground?
Yeah.
Did you know about that?
No, I didn't know it was 11 miles. Though,
yes, 11 miles. It's 11, when I was there doing this work, the guys, one of the security guards, said, up under here, it's 11 miles of another town. In case something goes down, it can go underground. 11 miles.
Ooh.
So the Vatican, it's another city. It's like New York. It's another city under New York.
Yeah, I'm from New York, so I can definitely vouch for that. And even when you get upstate New York.
Dallas, Texas, down off of Maine. It's another city, underground of Dallas. Matter of fact, years ago, we should go down underground and use the bathroom. That underground place for restroom, they boxed it off. There's an underground city under Dallas. One main bank is down underground. Federal Reserve is down underground.
Okay. I hope that answers the call, Mr. McGee's question. Let me ask the question about secret societies. It said that the Vatican was tied to a lot of secret societies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a group that they never talk about. It's called the Grand Council of the Cross of Constantine, 313 A.D.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of your oldest ones.
Mm-hmm.
That they come out to control all society, and they never get more than 35 members to a city. They kept their number small. A number of years ago, I happened to be in North Dallas at an estate sale. I got a copy of one of their minutes, and it said on the front, anyone caught with this book who was not a member was subject to death.
Wow.
Well, I passed it over to a guy by the name of Steve Coakley.
Wow.
Anybody remember Steve Coakley? He's one of the most black renowned conspiracy theorists, and the young man knows his stuff. So I gave all four copies that I had to Steve Coakley, and he reaffirmed that everything in that book was accurate.
Everything.
It named places, amount of money they paid, what groups they controlled, where they controlled them at, and it was a minute. It was a minute. He said, how did you get this? We talked about it one day, and do you not know, for about 3 days, black helicopter flew to the hotel where he was at?
No.
Yes.
Wow. One thing Mr. Maxwell did share with me, you know, he said, in doing the show, Carrie, you must be aware that there are certain things that you cannot talk about just because you're on Blog Talk Radio and you feel like you got a microphone in front of you. You cannot talk about everything because I'm thinking, you know, freedom of the press, you can say what you want, but no. He said it's just not the case because, you know, FBI agents have come to his door, you know, at times and basically said shut your mouth about certain things that he was talking about. So, you know, I do know that there are some things that we don't get away with talking about, you know, and he kind of clued me in on some of those this morning. Well, let me ask y'all, one thing that was on the list to talk about with Ms. Maxwell and you know, the hour got away from us before we got a chance to go over it, the Jesuits. Can y'all explain to the audience what the Jesuits are? And kind of fill them in.
Well, I mean, now you really need to walk with that because he does that really extensively. But we can mention the fact that they're part of the Vatican, and King James was a Jesuit, and that's why the Bible was brought in. The King James was brought in place because what people don't realize, and anyone who claims to hold the Bible as dear, you need to know which Bible, the origin of it, and how many were before, and why the King James became so popular because it wasn't just handed to me. Bloodshed was shed behind getting that book. People died trying to get that book in place. You would die for having it. You died for having it in your possession.
But isn't the Jesuits connected to, like, drug activity and pornography and murder?
Well, hold on. Karen, come here. Before we get that far, let's go back to your very first question.
Yes.
Who and what are the Jesuits? The
yes.
Jesuits was the society or the order of Jesus.
That's it.
okay? That's number one. Regardless of what they do, or they're alleged to have done or not done. So that was your Lord, so to speak.
That's
and
it.
Anywhere else, for anyone who belonged in that order, especially if you was on the Council of King James, working under, especially the 1611, I mean, because the 1611, obviously, they call it that because that's when it was ready to be official, but they had been working on it for some time. And many of those characters who was on the Council of King James, mind you, King James himself, he was, for all intents and purposes, he was a pagan, okay,
yeah.
Like most of those people are. They were pagans. I mean, he belonged to, he came from a cult that also worshipped ghosts. So
yep.
When he's thinking about Holy Ghost up in the butt, that's not biblical. That's his thing. And everywhere you saw the name Elizabeth and Mary and all of them, that's all of the people who is either directly related to him or indirectly related to him. So while you're reading the book, reading about one set of, and getting one set of experience, that's the way I want to say it.
Yeah.
Because when you read the book, you do get an experience from reading it. So I'm not saying it's either good or bad. I'm just making that statement. So while you're seeing and getting your experience from it, from them, it's a playwright to them, when they first put it together, giving honor and raising up to themselves. So the Mary that they're talking about is not the same Mary you're thinking about is supposed to be the Mary of Jesus. They're not with you. Your experience is a different experience. Their experiences, while using the same name, they're going to raise up and give honor to someone else who is closely related to them, i.e. King James' mama being Mary.
When he said earlier when I asked him about...
It's a very interesting twist.
Yes. It is a very interesting twist. When he made the statement that he didn't believe Jesus existed at all and that he believed it was just a story, do you all agree with that?
I do.
Well, based on what he said, and I like the way Mr. Maxwell kept it real, he basically said, based on the basically all of the documents that he's got a lot of it, according to what the Romans recorded, the Romans don't have a history of having done something like that to someone like that. They don't have a history like that. Like many of the so-called prophets that are supposed to exist in quote-unquote Judaism, does not exist in no written history outside the Bible itself and any of these other countries that is alleged to have done the things to the Hebrew people that was claimed that was done to them.
Brother Mahir.
Some of the names of the fallen ones who were what they called the sons of God or whatever you want to call them, they were adopted as Hebrew prophets later.
Later.
And so now we're reading about these people, and you're thinking these people were like normal, like, you know, what's one of the prophets? Even right down to the Prince of Persia, okay?
Yeah.
And it's time to come to find out these are descendants of the Nephilim, and then these people got picked up, and now they're written as though they were prophets that, quote-unquote, the Lord spoke with. There is an issue with that. So it doesn't match the records of other nations, as other nations were living their lives on a daily basis. Some of the names are familiar, but not most of them.
Yes, sir.
And when I say that, people have to go back and read the material on many other ancient societies who had savior gods born of God and of a heavenly of a God and an earthly parent. North America can verify this. The word Mary does not equate in Hebrew Judaism because the word be Miriam, not Mary. Mary is an English name, and that if Jesus was born at the tribe of Judah, his mother would not be named Mary. It would be Miriam along that line. And none of
right.
those names
Mary,
are tired.
Mary
plus,
M.
There was no J. It does matter. But there was, you can't even write the name. And there was only one person who come close to that would be known as Mahal Shel Hezbollah, who you find in Isaiah 7, chapter verse 1, and also chapter 8 and chapter 9. It's talking about Mahal Shel Hezbollah, not about Jesus. They borrowed that concept, and Musa would tie in with other savior gods like Krishna. There's a guy by the name of Kirsty Graves, who wrote a book called The World's 16 Crucified Savior. Dr. Robert Frank Robert wrote another book, The Crucified Heathen Gods. You read and find all these gods and parallel in their actions and so forth. So you can't tell them apart because every nation has a savior god messiah concept.
Okay. AJ Houston, you had a question out of the chat?
Yeah, I do. He said, is the English language corrupt, a corrupt language?
Yes, it is. It's one of the most corrupt languages on the planet. But it's based out of...
It was called the serpent language, and it was also known as the forbidden tongue.
Nobody
was even allowed to speak it. So that's history. That's the history of the language. So the language itself came out of the Masonic Lodge from what they called the serpent, based on the square of the number six. So every letter has the vibration of six in it. Every letter.
It's a hissing sound. Not only that, the guy's name is William Tyndale. Look up the history of William Tyndale. He was the one who began to put the Gothic and the Slavic and Saxon language together to create a language for what they call the European. I'm looking forward to Carrie to seeing you one day. I'm going to bring the Riddle of 1611, and you see, it's going to shock you what's really in it. Not the one that they have from the Vatican, the Riddle of 1611 in Bastonian language. It reads nothing like the book you have that you claim it came out of. Nothing.
Correct. Correct. As a matter of fact, the 1611, and that's an example, the language that they're calling English today is obviously, and they call it properly, a bastard tongue. It's called that. Okay? And in the Bible, it's referred to as speaking in stammering lips.
Yeah.
So these words you're saying are sometimes you're cussing each other out, literally, and don't even know you're doing it, like using the word Y-O-U. That's one of the words right off the bat, talking about you as a personal, as a pronoun. And every time you use the word Y-O-U, you're saying evil, wicked. Every time you say that. But when we're speaking, we say, yes, well, I'm speaking with you, or I'd like to speak with you for a minute. You just said, translation, I like to speak with evil and wicked.
The wicked one.
And the word nega, N-E-G-A, was also, it meant cursed, not N-I-G-G. E-R. We're not talking about that word, or N-I-G-E-R, Niger. We're not talking about those words. Those words are fine. But when you think about how the Southerners used the word on that, they say, hey, nigga, and they wasn't talking with the R. They were saying N-E-G-A. Well, when we saw them, we called them that word first. That word is also in the Old Testament in Hebrew, and it means not a people. It means not a people. So we used to put the words together and say, yo, nigga. Yo, nigga.
Okay,
like
if you
today,
just
somebody
come in,
say, you're nigger. Yeah, but they don't know what they're saying. Yo nigger means evil, wicked, and not even a people, or not
people.
A recognizable people. That's what the word means. And yet
if you just
tune
in, you're listening to the all-new KLHT 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, Talking with Jordan Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell was with us for the first hour. He's no longer with us, and we're just kind of piggybacking off some of the things that he discussed with us in the first hour. If you're on the phone line and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. We're down to our last 13 minutes in the show. A reminder, Mr. A.J. Houston is in the chat room today, so if you have a question or a comment, you can post it up in chat, and Mr. A.J. Houston will present it to the panel. Also, something that Mr. Maxwell said in the first hour was that, and, you know, I was surprised at that he said that as far as Islam is concerned, he didn't believe that Muhammad existed at all. What do you all think of that?
Mahir?
Well, okay, I've dealt in that religion for quite some time, and I can tell you that there are some unanswerable anomalies. Some things I've managed to figure out, and I do read Arabic anyway, so I'm very good with that language, and I can go back and forth between Arabic and Hebrew. Well, the histories about what they say, who this person was, and how things were supposed to have gotten started, actually, there were several prototypes, so it's not just one. There's a few of them.
Oh.
And some of these prototypes, yeah, did very different things. As a matter of fact, they have a set of writings which is similar to the Jewish writings, Talmud, which basically means a collection of writings.
Mm-hmm.
The Hadith. There's many different types of writing. And in there, you find different variants. You find a Muhammad who is black. You find Muhammad who is white, and you know he's white because he's holding up his arms, and you're looking at the hairs of his reddish-looking armpits. And then you have another Muhammad who's cursing someone because he comes to ask a favor, and the lady couldn't perform it, and so he curses, allegedly, her son's black. And, you know, you have these different kinds of anomalous things going on. And I'm not making this up. But yet, in the end, Muhammad himself is supposed to be black. As a matter of fact, that wasn't even his name. Okay, it was a man whose name was supposed to be Ahmed. And what Ahmed was talking about, which means praise, it's one of praise, the word Ahmed, what he was speaking of, it seems that very quickly many of his teachings were brought over by someone named Usman. Usman waited until he died. And in the course of this, what we call Muhammad today, having supposedly to have died, Usman comes out with the Qurans that are supposedly in the world today. Usman, who is supposed to be accredited with writings today, okay, the Qurans, which most Arabs don't like to admit, is referred to as Usman's Quran.
That's
and
right.
This is a guy who has never supposedly ever sat down and spoke with Muhammad. Never. Okay? But he belonged to a warring faction, such as, I believe, the Meccans, which is supposed to be a clan that Muhammad supposedly is supposed to have come out of, and they dominated and controlled all aspects of the pagan religion in the first place. So definitely they saw him as a threat. This is the way some of the history goes, so don't mind me as I'm streaming a little bit together. But basically, in a nutshell, there's a lot of more unanswerable questions because some things got changed and flipped around compared to what was really supposed to have been said that he is really supposed to have taught. And when I hear people talk about, well, you know, Muhammad the pedophile or Muhammad did this and that, I often wonder,
which
because
one?
I know they don't have the answer, which one are you talking about?
Carrie.
That's the problem we run into in history. Because we study and have become aware of these things, we all of a sudden have to ask the question, well, with whom are you speaking of?
One.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Carrie?
Yes, sir.
One time we was talking off and I asked you, I said, well, which one of Jesus are you talking about? Because it's three of them, it's four of them, but it's three of them is in the New Testament. And the other one is in the old, his name was Jesus Pedarus, 100 B.C., who lived. And that was another time period.
Okay.
And people say, no, because most people say it's only one. Then people say, well, I believe in God. I ask you, which one? You say, ain't one. And I say, there's 330,000. People say, we talk crazy, but man, on a week, you can go and name all of them. You can go in and bring them all up. You know?
Yep. They've linked them these days. Bar Jesus, Jesus of Apollonius. You know, it's like, which one are you talking about? Because the Council of Nicaea sat down and with one thought in mind that they were going to roll up all of the different personalities of the various different individuals with those names. The 80-year-old man who was locked up for being a rabble-rouser and a Black Panther, you know, which is what's hence the symbol Black Panther, you know, was the symbol that they used. You know, then you had the Ebonites, where they talk about you speaking Ebonically. The Ebonites is not an offensive language. It's not a slang language. It was just a group of people, and they were called the Ebony people or the Ebonites.
Yeah,
who they were.
They went down into Asia or down to Seoul, called Korean area. They married a woman who died at the age of 100. You know, so you got all these histories. So the idea is, what do you believe? What do you want to believe? What makes you feel good? You know.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Well, I wouldn't say what makes you feel good. I would say more like research for yourself.
Well, see,
I wouldn't say what
most
makes
you feel good. Most people are not going to do research. They're going to go on what they feel and believe, not what they know. Most people talk about what they feel and what they believe. They have not done the research. Brother Mahan, Brother DeWar and I, we did a dialogue in 05 with the Church of Christ there in Dallas. And we proved this point beyond a shadow of a doubt. Most folks serve out of feelings, not out of knowledge.
Yeah. And I can remember, Carrie, once this ball started rolling, and mind you, I was even back in New York, didn't know Cole yet, but back in New York, before we put together our study group that we had once a week, we kept each other up all night because every time we turned around, we put down the telephone, and next thing we called, hey, man, guess what else I just found? And mind you, the Internet wasn't even a big thing yet.
Ooh.
So we were going to the library getting books and, hey, listen, man, you get a chance, go check this book out. And we go in there, and you know, some of these books are pretty expensive, so, you know, you could go broke trying to, you know, buy these books. So meanwhile, we were in the library burning it. Hey, listen, man, I got home out of the main library downtown at 1 in the morning. Wow, I didn't know they opened that late. Listen, they got a section in there you need to check out. This is what they're showing in there. Wow, I never heard of that book before. See what I'm saying? And you start reading all this stuff and putting together, especially when I met Cole. Cole was talking a lot about the people from the seminaries. That's the thing that kind of blew my mind for a moment. When he was talking about Gerald Massey and all these different people who were prominent individuals, you know, involved in Christianity and in the church. And I couldn't believe it. It's like they let these guys write books like this. You know, and then these books are in the libraries, and you can walk in if you know about it and take it off the shelf and actually read this thing and let this guy tell you some stark, you know, naked truth about certain things that you need to know about. My goodness, how did he let this, how did he let somebody get away with that? That became my thought, and some of it had some fear attached to it because it really made you wonder how far are they willing to allow someone to go to actually reveal something. So that's why you should take to heed what Maxwell said to you about, you know, because you have a talk show and you're doing what you're doing,
it
don't mean that you got carte blanche.
Yeah. Well, they
don't mean that.
When
you
all are talking about all of this research, and I believe research is good, but I think on some level, even with all of your learning, still don't you have to pray for wisdom in how to take that knowledge and apply it? Because if applied wrong, you can head off in the wrong direction.
Well, that's why we always give a disclaimer, okay? Wisdom doesn't come out of thin air. Wisdom is what? Wisdom is the culmination and the pinnacle of your gathering knowledge first at the low level. You don't necessarily know what to do with all this. It's like going to elementary school and high school. You learn algebra, geometry, trigonometry. You're not using these tools yet. You haven't connected the dots to how you can apply them somewhere yet. And as you move on and you become a little bit more focused and specialized, that knowledge builds your confidence and familiarity with what you are doing, okay? And then you reach a point of having the knowledge, you develop the skill sets and the confidence, and then at some point, because you know how these things work, you don't need to do all of the empirical, you don't have to engage in the empirical experiment anymore. You can just simply say what something is and call it rightfully so because you know what the end result is. That's wisdom. You have achieved wisdom. Wisdom is not a separate and apart from all of this. So, yes, to answer your question, we definitely, by all means, have to be extremely careful in terms of the knowledge that we get. That's why it's like a lot of what we do, Cole, myself, and Dewa in our study group, we, you know, when you squeeze orange juice, it has a lot of pulp in it.
Right.
So we have to use one of those strainers, depending on how much pulp we actually want in the juice, because you do need some pulp in the juice. We just don't want the glass half full with pulp. So we have to strain it out. We constantly strain it out stuff and say, okay, I found a little rock in here. Throw that out because we don't need that. We don't want rocks in our liquid.
Absolutely. That's going to have to be the final word. We'd like to say thank you to our guest today. We had Mr. Jordan Maxwell with us for the first hour, Mr. Maher El, and Kohan Yashabaya. Also, if you're trying to contact Jordan Maxwell, you can reach him at www.jordanmaxwell.com. Also, a reminder, the views and opinions of our do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or our host. And on behalf of AJ and myself, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Hello?